Thank you for listening to this sermon from Seven Springs Presbyterian Church. If you want to learn more about us, please find us on Facebook or visit us at sevenspringspresbyterian.com.
We'll be looking at the second half of 1 Samuel 17 this evening. And next week, we'll look at the type of Christ, particularly types of Christ regarding David. This is a good passage to stop and think about how David is a type of Christ pointing towards Christ. But as you remember, when we looked a couple of weeks ago at the first half of chapter 17, that we met with David, Goliath, the mighty man, which comes down on the camp of the Philistines on these two mountains, these two hills, comes down to the valley to be able to call out. And he defies the armies of living God to come out and send a man to fight him. And the response of the fearful king and the fearful army is to sit there quaking in their boots or their sandals. But then David is sent on this delivery run from his father to be able to deliver some bread and other things to his brothers. And he is then, by God's providence, placed in the right position when Goliath comes out to meet them. He does this morning and evening every night, and David hears what Goliath has to say. But we looked at this verse particularly in verse 26, David's response to Goliath. And David said to the men who stood by him, "What shall be done to the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" And the concern, as we looked at last week, we normally would maybe put this in the category, if we were putting it in categories in the Lord's Prayer, under the petition, "Deliver us from evil." But really, it's put underneath the petition, "Hallowed be your name." His concern is for God's name. We saw the people's response, the people's perspective of just telling David what the first half of this question, what would happen to the man who kills this Philistine? And the people's response is horizontal, that the king will give him blessings and a daughter to marry. We saw Eliab's response of just trying to know David's heart. We saw David's response against God's name, and again, people's perspective. So David was sent as a delivery boy to the battle. He started to stir up as he continues to ask questions all about the camp. And eventually this news gets to Saul. And we've seen this shift before from being a Saul-centric narrative. Now we're switching to David. David really comes the central person, this character that we focus on. But now we turn to Saul as the king and David again. Now, if you remember back in chapter 16, David is anointed as God, as king over Israel, and the Lord, the Holy Spirit, rushes upon David. But as you remember back to when Saul was anointed in chapter 10, he was anointed as king, and he was given these signs that confirmed this anointing. The Spirit rushed upon him, and he prophesied like man. But we haven't necessarily seen this anointing of David flow through. So what is that sign we're looking for, that he is actually the Lord's anointed? So now we come to look more of an intro, as this intro back to the first half. Now we spend a bit of time of this intro to Saul and David. When the words of David spoke in verse 31 were heard, they were repeated before Saul, and he sent for him. So David is asking these questions, and all these people are talking about this around the camp. And eventually this news comes back to Saul. Somebody, David has come and he's causing gossip around the camp. David came to deliver bread. He passed that bread off to the baggage handler, and he went and started asking all these questions. We need to be reminded of his questions, as we looked at before. They're the only words that we have up to this point, besides his question to Eliab, David's brother. David just goes through and repeats throughout the camp, "What shall be done? What shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine, takes away the reproach from Israel?" Again, that reproach, the name of Israel. "For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" Now, Saul's response throughout all this time, although Saul's been in the background, Saul has been afraid. We saw in verse 11 that Saul and all of Israel heard the words of the Philistine. They were dismayed and greatly afraid. However, David is in a different situation. And his response in verse 32, when he goes before Saul, is that David said to Saul, "Let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight this Philistine." Even here we get a glimpse of David as the shepherd. "Let no man's heart fail because of Goliath. I will fight him." What a different perspective that is from what we've seen and how everyone else has responded to this. Refreshing, you think about 40 days and 40 nights this Philistine comes up of maybe about 3,000 men at least, but more likely the number is larger than that. In 1 Samuel 15, verse 4, Saul summoned the people and numbered them in Telaim, 200,000 men on foot and 10,000 men of Judah. So there's no shortage of warriors in this situation. And even if you go back to chapter 14, which explains in verse 52, there was hard fighting against the Philistines in the days of Saul. And when Saul saw any strong man or any valiant man, he attached him to himself. So here we have not just an army, but an enormous army with men filled up of strong men, valiant men, and they attached themselves to Saul. And now you have Saul, the king. Now, what did they ask for the king to do? They asked for the king to come and fight their battles in chapter 8. Why do you want a king? You want a king to be able to fight their battles. Saul is there, but Saul's not coming up and standing before the plate. You have Eliab, which, as you remember, in chapter 16, when Samuel goes before and Eliab comes before him, and Samuel says, "Surely this is the Lord's anointed." But God says, "Do not look at the height or the outward appearance. God looks at the heart." And then you have Jonathan. Even Jonathan's probably in this camp at the moment. Now, Jonathan took on the garrison of many Philistines, just him and his sword bearer, his shield bearer. And then all you have these strong men and valiant men, yet none of them are willing to come and face Goliath. However, now there's a young shepherd boy, David, who comes up, who was sent to deliver bread, has come now and is willing to fight Goliath. And we have previously noted that when we get to this explanation of Goliath in verses 4 to 7, it shows his strength, the strength of Goliath, his height, his width, his armor, his weaver's beam spear. But now we come to David's weaknesses. We show the strength of Goliath, but now we come to the contrast of David's weaknesses in verses 33 to 40. And first of all, we start with his weaknesses in war. Now, what does his weaknesses in war mean? He has the weakness when Saul comes and speaks to him in verse 33. Saul says that, "You are not able to go up against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are but a youth, and he has been a man of war from his youth." Saul bluntly tells David that he cannot fight him. You want to go and fight him, your heart is willing, but you are unable to do so because you are a youth. You are not able to go up against this Philistine to fight him, because his reasoning is, you are a youth and he is a man of war from his youth. Now, youth, this word is translated as young men or a boy throughout the Bible, and we've frequently seen this word since the beginning of the book. We've seen it a lot with Samuel. Samuel was a boy ministering to the Lord in chapter 2, and 2 verse 8. He was a boy clothed in a linen ephod. And as the boy grew in the presence of the Lord, 2 verse 22. Now the boy Samuel. And now the boy was ministering in the presence of the Lord in Eli at the start of chapter 3. And again in chapter 3, Eli perceived that the Lord was calling the boy. We've seen this word a lot used throughout this passage. Now, he is young, but I would say that he is young, but not necessarily a six-year-old. When we hear the voice of Samuel and him being a boy, I think you see the progression of that age range that this word can encompass. It can be a young boy, but it also could maybe be a teenager as well, a young youth. And that's kind of how the ESV translates it. You're a youth. But it's not so much how old he is. It's not as much how old he is. More to the point, it's how inexperienced he is at war. He is young, but he's also inexperienced at war compared to the Goliath. And Goliath's strength is, when you were Goliath's age, Goliath was fighting in battles. But you haven't necessarily been a man of your battle. Not only you're young, Goliath has been a man of war since his youth. When Goliath was your age, he was known as a man of war. So he comes more at experience, not necessarily age. But how is Saul looking at this? Saul is looking at this from outward appearance. Now, we've seen this relationship between Saul and David before. However, we notice later that Saul cannot remember David. But when Saul was introduced to David in chapter 16, can you remember what was said about him? It said in chapter 16, the young man turns to Saul and explains who might be able to help him. And he says, "Behold, I've seen a son of Jesse, a Bethlehemite, who is skillful in playing, a man of valor, a man of war, prudent in speech, a man of good presence, and the Lord is with him." And you remember back to the famous verse in chapter 16, verse 7. The Lord said to Samuel, "Do not look at his outward appearance or the height of his stature, because the Lord has rejected him. For the Lord sees not as man sees, but man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart." So what is David's weakness? Externally, David's weakness is, from the outside, is he is young. He is not experienced in war compared to Goliath, who is a man of war. So what is David's defense? David just doesn't acknowledge Saul's response and just say, "Okay, I won't fight him," or challenge him and says, "Well, maybe you is, so you should go fight him." David gives a defense, and David gives a defense in verses 33 to 37. "And David said to Saul, 'Your servant used to keep sheep for his father. And when there came a lion or a bear, and a lamb took a lamb from the flock, I went after him and struck him and delivered it out of his mouth. And if he rose against me, I caught him by his beard and struck him and killed him. Your servant has struck down both lions and bears, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be like one of them, for he has defiled the armies of the living God.' And David said, 'The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine.' And Saul said to David, 'Go, and the Lord be with you.'" Now, David says, "I know I'm not an experienced man." He doesn't try and argue that he is a man of war like Goliath. He doesn't go to his strengths so much. He goes to his weakness. He goes to his experience as a shepherd. Goliath might be a man of war from his youth, but I have been a shepherd from my youth. Now, you could spend a lot of time here thinking and speaking of the shepherd, but maybe we'll talk of this as we go through, but maybe just a couple of points. We notice again, David's concern is for God's name. He says that he has defiled the armies of the living God. Now, this is the only second mention of God. The first mention is by his question in verse 26, and this is the only second mention of David. And again, it's important that David realizes God is not dead. God has not abandoned his people. He is alive. The second thing I want to point out is David makes a connection between himself delivering the sheep out of the mouth of the lion and the bear, and the Lord delivering me, or David, from the paw of the lion and the bear. That David understands his weakness in this moment. He doesn't go this and boast about his strength, his valor, that he took the bear and he fought the bear and he's got the strength to be able to conquer the bear, but the Lord was doing the work to deliver him from the paw of the bear. And God would then do the same to the hand of this Philistine. Now, this is the first mention in this chapter of Yahweh, the capitalized Lord that we see. This is the first mention of the Lord. Again, it's David who brings him up, the living God, and Yahweh in this, that Yahweh delivered me from the paw of the lion of the bear. Again, David points to his weakness. It's not because David is great. He's got these skillful abilities to be able to fight lions and bears. It's because God rescued him from them. And David goes, God. He knows the living God. But he also knows Yahweh, the covenant-keeping God of Israel. And David's defense is actually quite a terrible defense if you come and think about it. David's defense is actually, "You are right. I am weak. But My God is strong. His argument brings in God. God has delivered me from the impossible situations, and he can do it again. Again, think back to when Jonathan went to fight the garrison, the Philistines and the garrison. What he says is, the Lord will deliver us. The Lord will give them into our hands. Again, Jonathan understood that God is doing this. So Saul then responds and says, go, the Lord be with you. Now, we see this here, the Lord be with you. So he then commands them to go. But we already know that the Lord is with David. We know from chapter 16, verse 13, that when Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the midst of his brothers, the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon David. And from that day forward, and Samuel rose up and went to Ramah. That we know that the Lord is with David. David knows this, but Saul commands them and says, the Lord be with you. So now we look to chapter 38 and 40. And Saul clothed David with his armor and put a helmet of bronze on his head and clothed him in a coat of mail. And David strapped his sword over his armor, and he tried to go in vain to go, for he had not tested them. Then David said to Saul, I cannot go in these, for I have not tested them. So David put them off. Then he took his staff in his hand and chose five smooth stones from the brook and put them in his shepherd's pouch. His sling was in his hand, and he approached the Philistine. So Saul's response, again, is outward appearance. How can we get you to defeat this giant, this man, Goliath? Is we need to make you as much like him as possible. We need to clothe you in armor like he has. We'll make you a man of war. We'll clothe you in battle armor. We'll dress you exactly like Goliath. A helmet of bronze, like Goliath. A coat of mail, like Goliath. A sword, like Goliath. Now, David tries to go in vain, or in the New King James Version, it explains to walk. But he explains that it's not that he is unable to wear them. He's not strong enough. We have this image sometimes of how we've been told in Sunday school that Saul is just so big and David is unable to wear it because he's so small. Whereas we don't necessarily get this. He's just not experienced with it. He doesn't feel comfortable going up against it. He had not tested them, the passage says. So David straps this, and two times it says in verse 39 that he had not tested them. He had not tested them. Now, again, we have this normal image of a boy trying to walk around in a grown man's armor. However, we know this is not the case. Later, we'll see that David is able to pick up Goliath's big sword and be able to cut off his head with it. So it's not necessarily that he's weak physically. He just doesn't feel comfortable in doing it. Again, I think he really comes at it this weakness. There's no way, I'm not going to defeat Goliath at his own game. The Lord has to do it. The Lord has to defeat him on my deliver me. So, again, we go to what is Saul's solution. Saul's solution is outward appearance, to make them look like everyone else. But the Lord looks at the heart, we're reminded again in 1 Samuel 16. So, David doesn't even have time to test them. He must go. He goes in his weakness. He doesn't go as a warrior. He goes as a shepherd. That's important to do. So what does he take? Instead of taking all of his armor, you think about Goliath and how much verses we spent on his armor, his coat of mail, his spear, his javelin head, his sword, all these different types of things. David goes in and he goes as a shepherd. He doesn't go in as a warrior. He takes his staff in his hand and five smooth stones from the brook, and he puts them in his shepherd's pouch and a sling in his hand. So a staff, we understand, is a staff is something that guides, but it's also used as a weapon to defend. So it doesn't go in there how we again have an image of a shepherd, and he chooses five smooth stones and he puts them in his shepherd's pouch. Again, we're reminded of him being a shepherd. Now, most people might emphasize the stones or why they are. Some people go through and say that they have some meaning, their virtues that he's coming and taking, but I think this passage really emphasizes the shepherd aspect. Part of this, you don't want to overdo and read too much in historical narrative. Why did he choose five stones? He chose five stones, and that's what's recorded. Sometimes I think we can go too much into doing this. But we also have this idea of this sling being this small little cute toy that you give a young child on Christmas Day, where they go out and go and shoot cans or something like this. But we need to understand that this is not what we imagine a sling to be. It's more substantial to that. Maybe you might be able to fling about a 2-pound stone with it, or a large rock with it. It's not this forked branch with this small little thing, but more like maybe a shot put that you might be able to fling, which is turned around. We actually see in 2 Chronicles, when they prepare for army, Uzziah prepares for army. He has army shields, spears, helmets, coats of mail, bows, and stones for slinging. So again, it's not completely out of the picture that this is a weapon which is used throughout war. But we need to notice the difference between Goliath and the image that we have in this children's storybook Bible, that we need to adjust that picture a little bit. But we need to know that he goes in. He definitely doesn't come in this strong way. We're seeing this weakness which David comes in the against the Philistine, against this man. So now we come to the actual part that we remember. We've gone 41 verses, and the story of David and Goliath has yet to happen. David has never met Goliath in person. He's heard him speak, but now we actually come to this, the battle of the strong and the weak. And the first we come to is Goliath's words. Now remember, when Goliath spoke previously, when he spoke previously in verse 11, when Saul and all of Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. So these men of war, these people who have fought in battle, he hears these words of Goliath and they're afraid. So Goliath comes out again and moves forward and comes near David with his shield bearer in front of him. And when the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth, ruddy and handsome in appearance. And the Philistine said to David, "Am I a dog that you come at me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, "Come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field." Now, David comes with himself and the Lord. The Lord is his shield bearer, but Goliath comes with himself and his shield bearer. And finally, the Philistine, Goliath, gets a look at David, the one man which is chosen. Remember the threat which Goliath made at the start: you send one man from your army and I'll send one man from us, and it'll be man against man, and whoever wins, the other army will be their slaves. So this is they've had 40 days to be able to choose from Saul, Eliab, Jonathan, even these men of war, these valiant men. But finally they send out this shepherd, and he looks like a shepherd. He looks like a young boy. And again, we're reminded, do not look at the outward appearance. This is how man's perspective is. The outward appearance, David is very weak. But the Lord looks at the heart. Now, he notices three things about David. He notices that he's youth, and we've spoken about this before. This is definitely not a man. He's younger in age. I'm assuming that he's not quite in his 20s, but later in his teens. He's young. But not only is he young, he's ruddy. What this means is he's got this reddish complexion to him. So this is used when Esau came out red. Is that word, the same word used in Genesis 25:25. And all his body hair, cloak. So they named him Esau. So again, that same word there. So he's ruddy. He's got this reddish complexion. But he's handsome. He's a pretty boy. You know, you can always tell when you've been on a construction site for a long time. You can always tell the apprentice who comes on the first day of work. You know, their boots are pristine. Their pants are clean. Their shirt is nice. They've got their lunchbox that hasn't seen any dust at all. Everything is new. And you can always tell that first person, and this is what David looks like. You can obviously tell he's young. He hasn't seen a lot of war. You imagine Goliath might have a few scars, a battle scars that he would like to tell around the campfire. But David doesn't seem like that. He comes with this handsome appearance. And really, you might maybe think about your days at college or other people, and you can think about someone you might be able to call, you know, handsome or pretty in appearance. And you imagine them playing on the football team or something like that, that they might not fare too well. And this is, again, the things that Goliath notices of him are all external in appearance. But this is exactly what Samuel saw in chapter 12. He repeated these things, that Samuel saw the exact same things. He was ruddy, he had a beautiful eyes, and he was handsome. But the Lord said, "Arise, anoint him, for this is he." And even Goliath was somewhat a bit taken back. You know, it seemed more like an insult to Goliath. "Here I am, a strong, mighty person. I want to fight the strongest person you have in physical appearance." But he says, "Am I a dog that you come at me with sticks?" The Philistine cursed David by his gods. Now we think of this. We think of dogs as cute little animals that we like to have, but it's not necessarily the case there. "Am I just like this dog, this outcast, that you come at me with sticks?" You remember that David doesn't have a sword on him, doesn't have any armor on him. He's got his staff, his pouch, and his sling. You know, so Goliath sees him just as a shepherd. "Here I was thinking I would have a really good battle, but here's a shepherd standing before me, not a warrior." He sees his weakness. He knows his weakness. And we also then come that he curses David by his gods. It's not just merely a battle against man. It's a battle against gods. That your God is cursed. Again, the threats that Goliath had against to defy the nation, the ranks of Israel, were not merely just the physical, the Saul and the other leaders of the army. It was an assault against God, the living God. But then also, you need to understand that he sees it as God's plural. That this is what the nation of Israel looks like. That no one even knows that the nation of Israel is a monotheistic God that only worships one God. They're looking so much like the other cultures, they just think they're exactly like the other cultures that worship other gods. So Goliath finally taunts and mocks David. This smackdown talk. "Come at me. Come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field." Again, we need to stop and maybe picture this in our mind, that a 105-inch man with broad shoulders, many scars, a huge spear like a weaver's beam. I'm sure he had a very deep voice telling you that he will feed your flesh to the birds and the beasts. And this has previously made other soldiers tremble. But remember back to Hannah's prayer in 1 Samuel chapter 2. "He will guard the feet of his faithful ones, but the wicked shall be cut off in the darkness. For not by might shall a man prevail." Not by might shall a man prevail. This is the prayer that we see Hannah pray. Again, we've seen this before, that this passage really doesn't emphasize Goliath as a giant, as an enormous person, although it does tell you about that. It emphasizes Goliath as a man, that a man came up before the people. Goliath is merely just a man. And he asks for a man to battle, that repeated phrase that we've looked at, man versus man. So what is David's response? David's response is one of faith. And we see this in verses 45 to 47. That David said to the Philistine, "You come at me with a sword and with a spear and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, for whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you down and cut off your head. I will give the dead bodies of the hosts of the Philistines this day to the birds of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth, and all that the earth may know that there is a God in Israel." and all this assembly may know that the Lord saves not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give it into our hand." Now, you notice that David understands this comparison, that Goliath is standing there with his sword, his javelin, his spear, but he comes not in his strength, he comes in his weakness, and he comes in the name of the Lord God of hosts, the God of the army of Israel. And again, he comes in the name. His name is to be hallowed. Again, that reminder that why is he fighting him? He fights him because he has defied God's name. And he realizes that it's not himself that will deliver them. It's not him that will win the victory. It's through his weakness that God will fight. The Lord will deliver you. That David understands that God might use ordinary means, God might use a regular person, but the Lord is the one who does the work. The Lord will deliver you. God is ultimately the one doing the salvation, but he repeats this, that there's these secondary means that God's used, into my hand. I will strike you down, and I will cut off your head. David is the agent in performing God's work of God delivering him. You might be a strong man, David says, but you have a weak God. I am a weak man with a strong God. Now this is man-made religion versus true religion, Christianity, which is all about weakness. Man-made religion is all about how strong you are, the outward appearance, what you can do, how you can earn your salvation, what God can do to you if you are good. Whereas true religion, Christianity, is all about weakness. And Goliath threatens David that he will kill David and feed him to the birds and the beasts. But David goes up and he says, "Not only will I will kill you, but we'll go against the whole army of the Philistines." This is a testimony, not just to you right now, that we're going to teach you that there is a living God, but the whole army will know that God will do it. The battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hand. He's not just coming out there to prove a point to himself. He's doing it for the Lord's name, but also for the God's people. Again, this shepherd mentality that David thinks not only of himself, but the people is constantly in his mind. And here we have that final moment, this moment which has all been built up to come to. There's this shepherd standing there before this giant. Your threat only proves how you fight. You're fighting to show your power. Whereas my victory will show the glory of God. On this day, the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you down and cut off your head. And I will give the dead bodies of the hosts of the Philistines this day to the birds of the air and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. Again, there's this battle, but there's this battle for, and he has this evangelistic approach to this. It's not that I'm just fighting to defeat or save the Philistines, that everyone may know that the God I worship is the true living God. Again, we need to stop and think about how Saul's, and under Saul's leadership, this has not been prominent in his rulership. God's name has not been hallowed. God is not glorified. The people have not proclaimed this to the whole earth. Whereas under David, this different mentality, this heart for God. And David stands to proclaim to the world, but also to the army which is standing behind him. You would think that they would be counted as God's people who would worship him. But he's not only trying to convince the whole world, he's trying to point the people behind him to turn back and to worship God. And again, this leadership void of we're looking at in 1 Samuel. Who will be God's true king? Who will have God's heart to be able to point God's people back to worship him? And all the assembly may know that the Lord saves, not with sword or spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hand. And he's not only been evangelistic to all the other nations, the whole earth, he's been evangelistic to the people of God. having this discussion. It's like having, you know, a revival in your church, not just a revival to be able to have people that are lost outside the walls of the church to be able to be saved, but having the revival so that people in the church might be saved as well. That the Lord knows, that all this assembly may know that the Lord saves. Yahweh saves. Not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's. And in David's response in three verses, we get better theology than Saul has ever spoken. Saul has ever talked about. See the condensing of the Lord's name in these three words. You have better approach to this leadership battle, this leadership void which is happening. But finally, it comes down to it that there's this battle that takes place in verses 48 and 51. When the Philistine arose and came and drew near to meet David, David ran quickly towards the battle line to meet the Philistine. David put his hand in his bag, took out a stone and slung it, and struck the Philistine on his forehead. The stone sank into his forehead and he fell on his face to the ground. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and with a stone, and struck the Philistine and killed him. There was no sword in the hand of David. When David ran and stood over the Philistine, he took his sword and drew it out of the sheath, and he killed him and cut off his head with it. When the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled. This whole chapter has been leading up to this moment of this showdown. Now, often the Bible doesn't emphasize battles and give details of battles, whereas this, many times you might see that they go to battle and 100,000 men were lost that day, or very brief in their speaking of it. But this time there's a little bit more explanation. That David runs towards the battle line. That David approaches the battle line and he's going in with all of his might. And he takes out his sword and he slung it towards the Philistine, and the stone goes into his forehead and he falls face down. Now, this is very important. Now, you imagine that Goliath is also moving forward as well. Goliath is moving forward to battle. But even if he wasn't moving, if he was stationary and the stone was flung at him, that he would fall backwards. But he falls forwards. He gets hit in the head, you would fall backwards. But there's a connection that needs to be made here in 1 Samuel that we've read before, is in chapter 5. When the ark was captured, the ark goes and the Philistines take it to their camp. But there's Dagon, the god of the Philistines. And they place this ark besides Dagon. And what happens to Dagon in verse 4 in chapter 5? And when they rose early the next morning, behold, Dagon had fell face downward on the ground before the ark of the Lord. So what do? They stand him back up and they go place the ark. And then they wake up the next morning. And what has happened to Dagon? Again, he had fallen forwards before the ark of God. And the head of Dagon and both of his hands were laying cut off on the threshold. Only the trunk of Dagon was left to him. Again, we need to see this connection. It's not only merely man versus man, but God versus God. That it's Goliath and his God and David and his God that go into battle. And David cuts off his head just like the Lord had taken off the head of Dagon. Now we need to be reminded that David didn't have a sword, so he goes and he picks up Goliath's sword, and this sword comes up throughout the narrative of 1 Samuel, so it's important to notice he picks this up right now, that David has Goliath's sword, and he's able to do so. He's not weak enough. He's not weak as we might imagine. But now who is afraid? The person and people that are afraid are not the Israelites, but it is switched to the army of the Philistine. Even a shepherd with a sword brings fear into a whole army. How the tables have turned. And this leadership void of no one being able to come in and fight, finally we see someone who cares for God's name, for his glory, and he steps up to the plate and he comes. So now we come to the victory which has been we've been looking towards happening, verses 52 and 58. When the men of Israel and Judah arose with a shout and pursued the Philistines as far as Gath and the gates of Ekron, so that the wounded Philistines fell on their way from Shoram as far as Gath and Ekron. And the people of Israel came back from chasing the Philistines, and they plundered their camp. David took the head of the Philistine and brought it to Jerusalem, but he put his armor in his tent. As soon as Saul saw David go out against the Philistine, he said to Abner, the commander of the army, "Abner, whose son is this youth?" And Abner said, "As your soul lives, O king, I do not know." And the king said, "Inquire whose son the boy is." As soon as David returned from the striking down the Philistine, Abner took him and brought him before Saul with the head of the Philistine in his hand. And David said to him, "Whose son are you, young man?" And David answered, "I am the son of Jesse, the son of your servant Jesse the Bethlehemite." Now we see people's response before is that they go down and they're afraid. Their response is fear. But their response in this case is now that the Philistines are scared, they will go and chase them down. And David takes the head of the Philistine and he goes and places it in Jerusalem. And this is the first and only time Jerusalem is mentioned in 1 Samuel. It's mentioned 9 times in Joshua, 5 times in Judges, 1 time in 1 Samuel, and then 30 times in 2 Samuel. So Jerusalem hasn't become that central space at the moment where the capital of Israel. It generally moves by the Samuel. It seemed that Ramah was the case, Bethel when Eli, and then Saul in Gilbeth. So he takes the head and he takes it to Jerusalem. He puts the armor in his tent. But again, we come back to Saul. Saul's in the background. Saul doesn't know who this man is, although we most likely see the connection between 16 and 17. Some people might say that 17 was after the end of chapter 16, when Saul has the spirit of the Lord, the evil spirit of the Lord come upon him. That happens after chapter 17, but either way, my assumption is it's chronological. The chapter 16 goes in and chapter 17 happens. That Saul just doesn't know who's playing music for him during this time, that he's distressed that it hasn't happened frequently. He doesn't really care about people, it seems, maybe you might be able to say. But Abner, Saul's uncle, asks him, and David answers him and says, "I'm the servant of the son of your servant Jesse the Bethlehemite." So even this story continues into chapter 18, as we'll see in chapter 18, verse 1. As soon as he had finished speaking to Saul, the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him with his own soul. In chapter 18, we won't go into this tonight, but next, after we look at David in the type of Christ, next week, the following week, hopefully, Lord willing, we'll go into chapter 18. But next week, we'll be looking at this is a good example in this passage to stop and think about David as a type of Christ and how David points towards Christ. I think sometimes we can swing the pendulum too far, but we'll look at chapter 18 in 2 weeks. But for now, we're going to give a few concluding thoughts. And we need to be cautious about how we use this passage and what we emphasize in this passage. Most people, if you grow up in Sunday school, you might be able to bring up random details that you might not necessarily know about this story. How many stones did David pick up? Because we overemphasize some of those minor things in the narrative that don't necessarily are brought up or emphasized in the narrative. We might, why did David fight Goliath? What was it all about? And we might get those mixed up. And we come with these presumptions. And I said that last time, that sometimes when we come to a passage we know, we can often just go to what we know rather than what the passage emphasizes. And over these 58 verses, we're clear what the passage emphasizes, and we'll look at that again next week. But we also have this danger that sometimes because we know the story so well, we can try and put wrong categories on it. That we all have a giant in our life. We might have a giant of depression. And we need to take five stones. We take this general approach and we say, well, you need joy and the word and fellowship and prayer and devotion. And they're the five stones that you need to conquer your Goliath. Or that maybe we just take virtues from this. That David faced Goliath and David had courage. So we need to have courage as we face our giants. But courage isn't necessarily emphasized in this passage. It doesn't really show David's courage. He definitely had courage, but it emphasizes faith, I think, more. But also we can do that, and when we do that, we minimalize that Goliath was actually a real man. He was a 6 cubit tall giant that he stood before him. He was defeated in history by a real man, David, a shepherd. So sometimes we can read too much into the historical account and overemphasize historical facts, and we miss the point of the passage. So what are some broad categories I think that are helpful that I think are emphasized in this? The first is God's name. I mentioned this several times because I think we often would come to this and really think about this as God's, never thinking about God's name. We think about David defeating Goliath, but we don't necessarily think about why David defeated Goliath. We don't think about that Goliath defiled God's name, and this is what really motivated David into battle. We're not David in this story. We're the fearful army who needs a savior. We're the army shaking in our boots that don't care about God's name. We often don't stop and consider that. But again, we'll look at David as a type of Christ next week. The second thing is God still fights for his people. Do you remember God has rejected Saul as king? He warned them that if you ask for a king, that you would have to fight your own battles, that these armies would come and take you over if you're disobedient to my voice. But they're still his people. He's still raising up. He's rejected Saul as king because he knows that there is one to come who is better, that David is there. They wanted a king to fight their battles, but God is still the one that comes in and fights their battles through his anointed king. The God is the one that delivered Goliath into the hands of David. But then the third thing we need to note is God's providence. Remember that David was merely just coming to deliver bread. But this is a way that God raised up David to be in the right place at the right time to deliver his people from Israel. David came to deliver bread, but he actually came to deliver the people of God. And God was using all of this to show his glory, his faithfulness, to show that the Spirit of the Lord was on David. This is, I think, that sign which goes with that anointing, the rushing upon the Lord on David, is the rushing of the Spirit of the Lord upon him. Again, it's not that God made him strong. He continued to be weak in battle in man's eyes. But God gave him the anointing, the heart, to be able to see his name being defiled, the heart to be able to go forward and fight Goliath, the skills, the raising up, the preparing him to be able to go fight Goliath as a shepherd. So next week we'll stop and we'll go over this passage, but also just broadly before we begin with David, the narrative really focuses on David from chapter 16, although Saul is still king. But we're going to stop and we're going to look at David as a type of Christ.
Thank you for listening to this sermon from Seven Springs Presbyterian Church. If you want to learn more about us, please find us on Facebook or visit us at sevenspringspresbyterian.com. Seven Springs Presbyterian Church began in 1874 and is a congregation of the Presbyterian Church in America located in Glade Spring, Virginia. Please join us for worship on Sunday at 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. for His glory and His gospel.